Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, and a very good morning to you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Wow, this is our first broadcast since the new year.
Well, it is, and it's the first broadcast since I'm back in the country.
That's right. You have been out of the country adventuring with your family. You want to give us a little synopsis of favorite places you went, things you did?
Well, I tell you, we bounced around the Caribbean. We did a 14-day Caribbean cruise. And one of the things that we all came away with after visiting, I don't know. I think it was like 9 different islands.
Oh, wow.
Is that America is by far the best place to live.
Yes, so, that's true, true.
You know, I mean, my daughter was impressed by the fact that there is no income tax on some of the islands and no sales tax. And she said, Dad, we should move here and save your income tax. And I said, yeah, I'd like to save the money. On the other hand, these are not places I want to live.
No. So, no. Visit, you know, yes, maybe.
Visit, but, get away from the gloom, have some sunshine and warmth for a few days. But no, America is where I want to live.
All right. Okay. So, what was the prettiest place you were at? Can you think of the prettiest island in the Caribbean?
Oh, golly gee. Probably Aruba.
Okay.
Yeah. But
all right.
You know, the Windward Islands were very nice. So, but yeah, we're wintertime. There was more rough water. Things were not as clear as they often are in the springtime and so on.
Okay.
So it wasn't as gorgeous as it is sometimes of the year. Still, it was in the 80s every day and the sun was shining most of the time and it's hard to complain.
There you go. And then you come back. And it's cold and rainy and gray, and people have colds.
Right.
Like I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I got back to a message from Sebastian Gorka.
Oh.
You know, he has to give up his Newsmax TV show because he's going in the administration. He's going to be a terrorist advisor to President Trump. And so he can't be on Newsmax
and do that
at the same time. So his last show is going to air on Monday.
Oh, wow.
And so he asked me if I would, you know, put in a brief appearance on the show. So I told him, oh, yes. Yes,
I will.
So, so those of you that want to tune in Sebastian Gorka on Newsmax on Monday, you'll get a little brief blurb from me too.
Okay. I love that. They haven't tapped you for anything in the administration yet though, right,
God,
Dr. Mixon?
No.
Okay. Just checking. All right. And you've been gone off the air. We have had some wonderful shows that we featured, but no live call-ins. So today is the day that if you've been waiting to ask Dr. Mixon about anything concerning your health, or what's going on as you're aging, this is the time
this
to
is the
do
day.
It.
Give
yes.
us a call.
I'll give you a phone number, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. And Dr. Mixon, as you're playing catch up in the medical world.
Boy, am I.
Wow. Yeah, what's going on there? What should we be aware of?
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, I just got back last night.
That's right. Okay.
So I'm functioning on about, 4 hours sleep this morning. So, those of you who want to see a groggy Dr. Mixon, go ahead and call in today.
Still looking good, looking healthy.
Yeah, well, feeling good, actually.
Yeah, good.
But no, the you know, my biggest concern was the things I was chatting with Sebastian about. America has got a couple of problems we have to overcome. Mm. And one of those is our education system. If you look at the really first-rate private schools that the wealthy, the politically connected, the people that can afford to send their kids to the private schools, they are overall head and shoulders above America's public school system. That's why the people that can afford to send their kids there.
Right, yes.
They average 2 to 3 years ahead of the public school system. And so when you look at those schools, if you use that as a standard for American education, yeah, we are tops in the world. But on the other end of the spectrum, there are the inner city schools in most of America's big cities. And in those cities, the vast majority of the children cannot read or do math at grade level. I mean, it's overall, it's about 15% of the kids in those major school systems that can read or do math at grade level. And you know, that's appalling.
Yes.
85% of the kids in those school systems are basically relegated for the rest of their lives to the lowest echelons of American society. They will have the worst jobs, the least paying jobs, if they can work at all, which is why we have such a crime problem in the major cities. Because if you can't read and you can't add and subtract, nobody's going to hire you.
No.
Crime and welfare are your only options to support yourself. That's pathetic.
Yeah.
And then in between those two extremes, we have the suburban public school systems. But if you compare America overall, the best, the worst, those in the middle with the rest of the world, we're 27th.
Wow.
26 countries have better educated high school graduates than America does.
Wow.
That's why those H-1B visas are so important. Because most American kids go to public schools, and most American kids cannot function in a technological role. So we bring them in from China and India and you know all the other places where kids actually get an education. We need to fix that.
Yes.
We need America's schools to be number one on the planet. And we used to be.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that up until the 1970s, we were number one in the world when it came to education. And now we're number 26 or 27, depending on which group you look at. We've got to fix that.
Yes.
Okay. If 26 other countries can educate their kids, so can we.
Okay. Wow.
The other problem is health and lifespan. America is not the healthiest country in the world. We are number 60. 60.
Oh.
59 other countries live longer, healthier lives than America, and they're not highly industrialized countries with prepaid medical care.
Right. That's not it.
No.
That's not what's
second,
doing it.
A lot of second world countries, countries with very rudimentary medical care, live longer, healthier lives than America. So the problem is, we're the fattest industrialized country on the planet. And fat is killing America. We have diseases that are lifestyle diseases. Dementia is caused by being overweight for most people. Heart disease, strokes, diabetes, degenerative arthritis, chronic pain syndromes, depression. Okay? These things are related to the chronic inflammatory process in our bodies because we have too much body fat. That's the problem. So when I was chatting with Sebastian yesterday, he's promised to try to get me in to spend some time with Bobby Kennedy, who's going to be in charge now of Health and Human Services for America. and I want to visit with Mr. Kennedy and make a strong case that America needs to be a lean, fit country. We need to make being overweight as unpopular as being a smoker, because smoking killed Americans, but being overweight is killing far more Americans than smoking ever did. And that's something we need to change. So education and health, those two areas we need to work on.
All right. Very good, Dr. Mixon. You had a lot of things to think about.
Well, I had a lot of time to think.
Yes, you did. Wow. Well, we have a lot of phone calls. Are you ready for some?
Let's take a few.
All right. We've got several on the line, and you can too. 1-800-465-8770. All right. We're going to Mount Lake Terrace. Terry has a quick question for Dr. Mixon. Okay. Hi, Terry. Happy New Year.
Hello, Terry. How can I help?
Well, got a question about the presentation of cold sores, you know, on the lip and that sort of thing.
Right.
And in the past, you've recommended the triple amino because of the lysine and arginine and that sort of thing. Is there ever a time in the presentation of that where the arginine would be contraindicated, or is it always helpful?
Well, here's the double-edged sword. Do you remember Dr. Mixon's first rule of medicine? Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. Okay. Arginine is overall quite beneficial for us. You know, it increases our growth hormone production. It increases nitric oxide production. It decreases homocysteine. So these are really good points. But it helps to activate herpetic viruses, those blister-forming viruses. So arginine, while it does a lot of good stuff for us, if you are a carrier of a herpetic virus, it actually can activate the virus and make the cold sore show up. That's why we always include the lysine with the arginine. Lysine inhibits the formation of cold sores and all other herpetic infections. So lysine is good for people that are herpetic carriers, and that, by the way, is a significant portion of Americans. If you've ever had occasion to hold and kiss and snuggle with with someone who is subject to cold sores, you've been exposed to the virus. The good news is that most of us have immune systems to suppress that virus. And so for those of us that have that sort of immune system, we never get the cold sores, even though we have certainly been exposed to the virus at some point in our lifespan. So I would recommend that if you are subject to cold sores, at the very first sign of getting any itching, burning, irritation on your mucous membranes, you should increase lysine intake. Get another 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day of lysine on board, and do that a couple of times a day to kind of overwhelm the promotion effect of the arginine.
Sounds good. Now, a related question with a similar presentation, is there any something that you can do for the shingles presentation?
Shingles is a whole different issue. You know, shingles is a manifestation of our childhood chicken pox. Shingles are caused by the chickenpox virus, and almost all of us caught chickenpox when we were under 2 or 3 years old. But that is a neurovirus. That's a virus that impacts our nervous system. And so that shingles virus actually goes into the nerve roots, and becomes quiescent. Our immune system suppresses it. We still have the virus in there, but it's not causing any problems because our immune system has it suppressed. But as we age and our immune systems are become less and less competent, then the virus is able to become active again. And that's what causes shingles. It's a reactivation of that old chickenpox virus from our childhood. And so the really the best thing we can do for that is the Shingrix vaccine. You go get your vaccination, it boosts your immunity to chickenpox again, and that in turn suppresses the virus so that you don't get an outbreak of shingles.
Okay, well, that's been helpful, and I assume you enjoyed your trip, and welcome back.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes.
I am so grateful to be back. I adore being an American.
Yes. We're glad you're back, Dr. Mixon.
Okay.
All right, Terry, thank you so much for the call.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir.
All Bye-bye. Right. Several other callers on the line. We'll take a quick break right here, and we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Here's that number to call, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Yeah, yesterday's gone. Last year is gone.
Yes.
Lynette here. Good morning. Along with Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio, and the phones keep ringing. So we'll just take another call.
Let's do it.
Here we go. Tom from Burien calling in. Hi there, Tom. Welcome to the show. This is Leading Edge Medicine.
Hello, Tom.
Hello. Thank you. Yeah, I have a question about my prostate, and if I could, I would also like to ask a couple of questions about a few weeks ago. You mentioned about young men, their testosterone rates are going down.
Yes.
Okay. Well, about my prostate, I'm 80. Okay. About 20, 25 years ago, I was diagnosed with something called PIN. And other things are whatever it means, benign prostatic hyperplasia with not curate. Hyperplasia of the prostate specific androgen, ultra sensitive. And all I've been doing lately, I did have a biopsy a long time ago, but all I've been doing lately is getting PSA tests, which have always been very low.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, PIN is basically a inflamed prostate that has some abnormalities to it, but that are not malignant. Okay. So that's the good news. It was not a cancer, at least at the time you did the biopsy. But people with PIN have a higher incidence of developing prostate cancer at some point in their life. Now, you've gotten through 80 years with a PSA that's staying nice and low, so probably not going to happen to you. You know, about 8% of men develop a clinically significant prostate cancer that we actually find and is diagnosed. But interestingly, by 80, if we took your prostate out today, and I'm 77, if we took my prostate out today, you and I would both have about a 75% chance that we could find some little nidus of prostate cancer in our prostates. Okay. Prostate cancer is almost a quote normal development of aging men, but most of the time the cancer is suppressed by our immune systems and it never causes any problem. Doesn't grow, doesn't spread, doesn't kill anybody. That's the case for the vast majority of us guys. About 92% of us will get old and never have a clinically significant prostate cancer. Although if we did not just a biopsy, if we removed the whole prostate, did stepped sections of it and looked carefully under a microscope, we'd probably find a little bit of prostate cancer in you and me both. Okay. So the important thing is a healthy immune system. It's our immune response that suppresses that cancer and keeps it from growing. And the ways we keep our immune system healthy are, A, we need to stay as lean as possible. Okay. Overweight men develop aggressive, nasty, dangerous prostate cancers more rapidly and more frequently than lean men. We need to stay physically active because strong physical bodies work in muscle. The more muscle you've got, and the more frequently and intensely it's worked, produces over 600 proteins, most of which are designed to boost your immune response and suppress cancer and suppress infections and suppress inflammation. So working muscle is a real benefit to every man. And those are, you know, those are really important, obviously. Most Americans think of fat as a cosmetic issue. It isn't. Fat is a very active gland that's producing pro-inflammatory peptides, enzymes, and cytokines that are released into our bodies. And that inflammation is what predisposes us to dementia, heart disease, diabetes, degenerative joint disease, and cancers. Okay. Overall, probably 20% of all the cancer in America is caused by being overweight. So that's an important one. Which brings me to the second part of your call, and that was the fact that younger and younger men are developing lower and lower testosterone loads in America. And fascinating, male testosterone loads seem to peak some point in the 1960s. And since the late 1960s, there's been a decline every decade. It was some a little lower in the 70s, lower yet in the 80s, lower in the 90s, lower at 2000. And every decade, we're seeing a progressive decline in young men's testosterone load. It's also kind of fascinating to see the social milieu in which Americans are having less and less sex. You know, young, healthy people are being celibate at a much higher rate than ever before in history. And on the one hand, that may make for pious, you know, folks ready to go to heaven, but I suspect in large measure it's a consequence of our declining androgen levels, our declining testosterone.
Well, that gets me to cause and effect. You know, they say power is the best aphrodisiac, and we hear more about young men are not going to college at
yes.
Women are going to college at higher levels than men are. Could it be yep. psychological? They don't have the, you know, the stereotype of the young men yeah. living in the mom's basement and that.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things going on. One is for the last 20 to 30 years, we have had the whole social system telling us girls can be anything. Girls can do this. Girls can do that. Girls can be pilots. Girls can be astronauts. Girls can be scientists. Girls, 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 girls. And the boys are totally left out. They are assuming that boys will somehow get by without all that encouragement. And it's not true. Boys are getting discouraged. And also there's some biological impact here. Boys think better when they move. It's really kind of odd, but physical activity makes boys think faster and more clearly. I was always chided as a kid because I never let my feet stay still. I would sit in a chair and I'd be fidgeting and moving and so on. Turns out that's perfectly normal for boys that are trying to think and solve problems. I do my best thinking at 6 a.m., even when it's dark and black and rainy and windy out, because I'm trucking down the trail in the middle of the night by myself, and I can think well. You know, I'm not distracted. Our school systems reward kids who will sit quietly and not move. Yeah. That fits girls better than it does boys. Boys are not designed to sit quietly in a classroom hour after hour after hour. But we've done away with gym time. We've done away with recess. We've done away with every couple of hours letting the kids get up and run around and kick balls and chase each other and knock each other down. Typical boy behavior is not permitted in modern schools. And so
I think that may have helped me a little. I think I have a attention deficit syndrome, and I can't sit down very long. I'm always moving around.
Yeah.
Well, but let me ask one more
question. Our generation, my friend.
Thank you. Women are doing, young women are doing so much better, going to school at higher rates and position. Are their testosterone rates going up?
No, they aren't. And that's why I'm thinking there's primarily social. Our schools are designed for women. You know, it used to be college was a man's thing. In fact, at one time, the only people that went to college were the wealthy. College was designed, you know, to give you a, quote, well-rounded education so you could run the world. And then we kind of democratized college in the 1940s and 50s. We started getting more and more middle-class guys going to college. And it was relatively rare for women to go. And so women at one point made about 10, 15, then 20, then 25, then 30, then 40, and now 60% of college students are women, and only 40% are men.
Okay. Quickly, if I could, my original question about the prostate, do you think that's a reasonable thing to do, just take PSA tests? I haven't had even had a digital in quite a long time.
Oh, nobody does digitals anymore.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah,
by the time the cancer is so big that I can feel it with my finger, we've got a problem.
Okay.
We want to pick it up when those cells are first starting to grow and become an issue, long before that you can feel it with a digital exam.
Oh, okay. Wow, okay.
Yeah, is that helpful for you, Tom?
Thank you. This has been very interesting. Thank you very much.
Good information.
Take care.
All right. Thank you for your call. All right. We're going to take our quick break here, Dr. Mixon. We'll be right back. Let me give that phone number out. 1-800-465-8770. We're going to talk with Don and Eddie. Oh, and we have Margaret on the line, too.
Oh, good. I was starting to say, is this going to be an all-male show?
No. Margaret's got some great questions for you.
All right.
Yes. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment. Stay right there.
Breaky. I do like that song.
Yes. Good morning and welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon here, taking all the calls, answering all the questions, and boy, do we have a bunch of them.
Well, not all the questions. Sir, sometimes I have to say, I don't know.
Not yet, though. Not yet on this show.
Not yet today. There have been many times. I am often appalled how little I know about this chosen field of mine, medicine.
Okay.
But, you know, I do my best.
All right, if you want to stump the doctor, today is the day.
Oh, please don't. I'm always embarrassed when somebody calls me up and I say, I don't know.
I don't know.
But, you know, I'll go look it up.
Yes, you will.
And then if they'll call back the next week, I can give them an answer.
Very good. All right, 1-800-465-8770 is that number to get through for Leading Edge Medicine. We are staying in the Bellevue area. Don is on the line. Welcome to the show, Don.
Hello, Don. How can I help?
Good morning. Thank you. I've got a question about alpha-ketoglutarate, AKG, which is reported to reduce biological age as measured using DNA. I wonder if you have any comments on supplementation with calcium AKG.
Okay. Alpha-ketoglutarate is a component in the Krebs cycle, the citric acid cycle. And so it is part of the process of producing energy for life in general, and also for your strength, enthusiasm, endurance, and so on. It seems to have a positive impact on the immune system, which is one of those areas that I'm always concerned about, because, you know, the immune response is critical for protecting us against cancers, degenerative changes, inflammatory changes, etc. So I see no downside to supplementation with ketoglutarate. I don't normally prescribe it for most of my patients. And that's simply because there are so many things in this world that can be beneficial when used in the proper doses. And I don't like it if my patients have to spend $500 a month on supplements. It's just, there's a limit to how many pills the average person can take in the average day. So you kind of have to start being selective. I am aware of studies in alpha-ketoglutarate that went out about 3 years, and after, over a three-year period, there was no significant downside other than the occasional, you know, rash and or upset bowel. But virtually anything you take by mouth is going to cause somebody's bowel to get upset. So I kind of discount that as long as it's, you know, 3 to 4% as an upper limit. It's being used in cosmetics to some extent. It's being used to apply to the skin to try to enhance stimminess and turnover within the skin. So, yeah, the studies are mostly animal studies, but the human studies also are, while there's not as many of them, do show some benefits. So I have no objection to it. It's just not my number one go-to. Does that answer your question adequately?
Yes, it does, Dr. Mixon. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you for the call, Don. Okay, we'll continue with more phone calls, and you can get through, too. Here's that number to call to get into the call queue, 1-800-465-8770. Headed now to Lacey. Eddie has a question for us. Hi there, Eddie, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Eddie.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I am doing so well. If the scoundrels in charge find out how good I feel, they will tax it.
They may.
So, you know, let's keep it a secret. Just me, you, and a few thousand of our closest friends.
Yes.
Okay?
Sound like a plan.
How can we help?
I'm calling about my prostate.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about it?
It went from 0.01. Now I'm up to 6.
Oops.
Should I go back and get another surgery or
okay,
what, radiation?
Let's back up a little bit. What was the original surgery for?
The prostate. Take it out.
Okay. Then they did a total prostatectomy? They took the whole prostate out? Or they just took out the part that they knew there was a cancer in?
They took the whole thing out And then when I go back for an evaluation again, it was 0.01, like you didn't get everything.
Right. Well, 0.01 is effectively zip. Prostate-specific antigen, which is what PSA is made primarily in the prostate. But even men without a prostate will sometimes produce a little bit of PSA. The test is not perfect. But if you're up to 6... you've got prostate cancer that had already spread. They just didn't know it at the time they did your study, because nobody whose prostate has been removed has a PSA of 6 unless there is prostate tissue growing somewhere in their body and growing fairly fast. So, yes, you
no,
get
that
back.
That was 8 years ago.
No, I understand. Here's the interesting thing, okay? You get a prostate cancer, and we think we've taken it all out. Our PSA drops to essentially undetectable levels, but a few cells had already spread elsewhere in your body, somewhere in your pelvis, somewhere in your bones, somewhere there were some little tiny prostate cells of cancer that had spread, and we didn't know about them. And as the years go by, they start to grow. And they grow slowly at first, but it's a logarithmic growth rate. First, there's one cell. That cell becomes 2, and then there's 2 become 4, and the 4 become 8, and the 8 becomes 16, etc. And it's not that unusual to see prostate cancer reoccurrence, or at least the metastasis show up 5, 6, even 10 years up the road. If you've got a slow-growing tumors, with a slow doubling time, it can be 10 years or more before we actually see enough tumor burden that we're picking it up. So you need to go back and see your urologist and or your oncologist. They need to do some studies. They probably want to do some studies in which they put a little radioactive isotope in your body and then do enhanced MRIs looking for where these little spots or tumor might be hiding. And then if they can find one, they need to biopsy that, do some genetic studies on it, and then try to customize your care. We've got some really neat checkpoint therapies now and immunotherapies that are incredibly good at targeting specific tumors. We can't get them all as yet, but we're making really good progress in finding ways to address metastatic disease and prostate cancer because it's so common. So you get yourself back into your doctors and, you know, let them start working it up and find out where this is and how much they think we need to do about it.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. You take care, sir. Good luck.
Yes. Thank you, Eddie, for the call. All right. And Dr. Mixon, we have some more calls. Before we do that, let's talk a little bit about longevity. Our medical clinic, which, of course,
is the reason we're here
yep. and sponsoring our show, Leading Edge Medicine, every single Saturday morning right here. We have three clinics, and we've talked about them. Now it's time to get you into one of them if you haven't been yet. We want to see you in 2025.
Longevity Medical Clinic is often referred to as an anti-aging clinic, and I've never liked that description. Mm. Because we can't reverse time. You've lived how many hours you lived. I've lived 77 years. Now, we can help you to function better. We can make you so that you make muscle instead of fat. We can make you leaner and stronger and faster and smarter and sexier and most of all happier. And that's what it's all about. Happy life. I think human beings should lead joyous, fun-filled lives. But that's harder and harder to do if you hurt all the time and you can't do what you want to do. You can't run and jump and leap and cavort and dance. I'm going to digress here just a little bit. We had an interesting day on this cruise that we just got off. And there was one day that they couldn't dock. We were going to use tenders to get into shore. And the water was rough. And so the captain decided to just not go to shore that day. We spent the day at sea. And my daughter, my 12-year-old daughter, was just outraged. You know, she said, you know, why did they have to do that? The water's not that rough. We can get on and off those tenders. And I said, sweetheart, you can. You're 12 years old. You know, you can jump onto that tender and jump off that tender. And if the boat's going up and down and up and down, you can jump off at the right time and do just fine. But look around at the other passengers. They are old, they're stiff, they're slow, they're fat. If they try to jump on and off that tender, someone or a lot of someone's are going to get hurt. And the captain's responsible for everybody on his ship, and he does not want people to get hurt.
No.
Now, she has difficulty understanding that, 12, because she doesn't understand that for those of us that are in our 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s.
She thinks everybody is in great shape like
everybody
Dad.
Everybody can jump and leap.
Yeah,
and
just like Dad and Mom.
That's right. Yes, and it's true. You know, I can get on and off the boat.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the people my age can't. And I should not be unique. I should not be the outlier for 77-year-old men. Yes, I can run for several miles. I can lift my body weight with ease. I make love, I think, more often than my younger wife would like. I don't have much body fat. I've got a lot of muscle. Yeah. That should be normal. That should be normal. If I had my way, every American in their 70s would get up in the morning and go out and be able and enjoy running 2 or 3 miles before they get short of breath. Every American should have a hard, flat belly. Every American should have great muscle mass. But we don't.
Right.
And that's because most people's medical care is not the kind of care we give you at Longevity Medical Clinic. We are cutting edge at that clinic. And the name of this show, Leading Edge Medicine. We are doing things that other doctors may start doing 20 years from now. But if you can't afford to wait an extra 20 years, you ought to come on into Longevity and help us. Let us help you get stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, happier than you are today. Because that's what it's all about. Longevity Medical Clinic doesn't make you younger, but we can shift your metabolism so you make muscle in preference to making fat. We can help your bones get thicker and stronger. We can make your muscles be more robust and give you better endurance and help your heart and your lungs and your brain to function as well as people that are currently 20 or 30 years younger than you are chronologically. So there's a difference in living a long time and getting old.
Yes.
And I don't want my listeners, I don't want my patients to look, feel, or function like they're old until they've lived a really, really long time. Okay?
Yes.
So that's what we're after. If you want to come to Longevity Medical Clinic, come and let us help you be stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier. Because that's what life is all about.
There you go. That's our goal. Here's that number to call. Make your appointment for that health analysis and get in. Let's see what life has done to you so far, what you're at risk for, and get you on the way to feeling better, looking better, and being stronger. Right, Dr. Mixon?
Stronger. I want muscle instead of fat.
Yes. There you go. Here's that number to call. 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, which is lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. Taking a quick break, and we'll be back with more of your calls right here on Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. Life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again.
Well, Dr. Mixon, you're not on the road again because you've been on, well, on the boat again. You've been on the boat for a while. Now you're back.
2 weeks.
Yes. And now you're back. We're glad you're here. Dr. Jerry Mixon here. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, and we're taking your calls.
That's right. You know, I am so glad to be back, and I've got great plans for the next 3 years.
Yes, you
and
do.
So I'm so anxious to get back in harness and get things growing.
Very good. Okay, well, let's take another phone call. This time, Margaret is calling in from Seattle. Hi there, Margaret. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Margaret. How can I help?
Hi, thank you. I have a question regarding, a general question regarding pancreatic cancer. My mother recently died from what they felt was liver failure, but then after her death, they indicated it was probably pancreatic cancer due to a quick onset of the symptoms and just a really fast spiral downward. She'd had the pale stools, the jaundice, the fast weight loss, the dark urine, problems with swallowing, you know, like a few weeks before her death. And then a terrible odor when she went to the bathroom is what was real noticeable. I have two questions. One is, what was that odor? Is that typical for pancreatic or liver failure? And are there any blood tests or general tests that can be helpful in diagnosing pancreatic cancer early on?
Yes. Okay. First of all, the answer to several of your questions is yes. The pancreas is involved in digestion. The beta cells in the pancreas produce the insulin to drive the sugars into our cells for metabolism to provide energy of life. But it also produces proteases, lipases. So the pancreatic enzymes that are produced are critical for digesting our food. And with pancreatic cancer, the pancreas is not doing its job efficiently. And so you don't get the proper digestion and breakdown of fats and proteins. And so the bacteria in your gut are having to kind of work overtime, trying to do some of the metabolism that your pancreas was supposed to have done. So yes, stools change. You can get changes in color, you get changes in texture, you get changes in odor. And that's because you have a real malabsorption problem going on because of the pancreatic dysfunction. The pancreas is a really touchy organ. The good Lord put it right in the very back of the belly, almost against your spine, way in the back, mm-hmm. where it's out of the way, where we don't mess with it. Because if you touch and handle the pancreas in surgery, you're going to cause a real inflammatory process. So pancreatic cancer is not normally diagnosed until quite late in the disease. Because it's not out where we can see it. It's not out where we can feel it. It's hiding way in the back, behind your stomach, behind your bowel, behind everything. And so you can get a lot of tumor there before anybody knows you've got a problem. The consequence of that is that it has usually spread and involved the liver and the bowel and all sorts of things before we even know it's there. So that's the downside. Okay. And that's probably what happened to your mom.
Okay.
The other part of your question, though, is yes, there is a test. It's one we offer to our patients, and it's called a Galleri test. It's a screening test. It's not a diagnostic study, but it's a screening test for 50 different cancers. And so one blood test takes a few weeks to get the results back, but it will look for proteins in your blood that are produced by cancer cells. And they can tell you with reasonable certainty where that tumor is. And one of the things that this test is pretty good at is pancreatic cancer. Now, the company, of course, wants everybody to have this test every year. Of course they do. They're selling it. They're making a profit, you know. But the reality is, those of us that are in late life, those of us that are in our 60s, 70s, 80s, to take that test as often as we reasonably can afford it would probably be a pretty good idea. It's depending on whether they're having specials or not, anywhere between $800 to $1,200 each time you take the test. And it's not currently covered by most insurance companies. So there is that impediment, just cost.
Okay, right. Okay. I thank you very much. Glad you're back. And thank you for providing a great service to us all.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you for the call, Margaret.
You know what? My greatest joys in life are learning things before other people know them. I really like to know stuff before most of my colleagues do. But I also love sharing that knowledge. And I think in some ways I'm a frustrated college professor. The problem I'd have if I were in a modern college is I'd want to talk about real biology instead of the social sciences fantasies that so many of the college want to spread these days. So they probably kick me out pretty fast because, there are men, there are women, there is nothing in between. There are happy men and unhappy men. There are happy women and unhappy women. There are people that wish they were something they're not. And that's okay. Everybody wishes they were a better version of themselves and to some degree at some point in their life. And if you want to pretend you're something you're not, as long as you know you're pretending, I don't care. Your life, live it the way that makes you happiest. But when you reach the point you honestly believe you're something you're not, you honestly believe that you are Abraham Lincoln or Madame Curie or a man when you're a woman or a woman when you're a man, now you've stepped over from pretense to delusion. And psychiatric delusions have significant drawbacks. Even then, I say live your life the best you can. I have no objection to, if you're a man who thinks they're a woman, that's fine. But I don't want you in my 12-year-old daughter's locker room. Okay. Believing it, unlike Peter Pan, believing does not make it true. You can believe it fervently. It's still not true. And the idea of men in women's private places is inconsistent with safety of women. Mm-hmm. And to allow mentally ill men, men with serious emotional disturbances, into the private places of women, that's an abomination. So, you know, guys, stay out of my little girl's locker room. And you crazy guys, especially, stay out of my little girl's locker room. All right. Let's move on.
All right. We're going to take some more calls here. And you can get through with the phone system here, 1-800-465-8770. We will put you on queue. We have Ben on the line calling in from Seattle. Hi there, Ben. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Hello, Ben. How can I help?
Well, in the past, I've heard you speak about estradiol and preferably it being lower versus higher, and then years later, maybe, let's say recently, I've heard you saying that maybe higher is a little bit better. So I'm trying to understand whether or not it's better to have a higher value with respect to estradiol. Now, LabCorp has the range 10 to 40. I'm wondering about the value that you might suggest or think is best, and or if you think utilizing the ratio between total testosterone and estradiol would be the best way to look at that subject.
All right. Good question. Sometimes a bit of a difficult answer. Nearly 30 years ago, when I was doing my original research before opening this clinic, my goal was pretty simple. I didn't want to use age-normed values. I wanted to move hormone levels for men and women to the areas where they function at their best, physiologic best levels. And that was pretty simple. What I did was I kind of arbitrarily picked the 25-year-old man or woman as my ideal and said, I'd like to move as many of our hormones and endocrine functions back to a 25-year-old range, even if you're like me in your late 70s. Because having the endocrine support of a young person, young man, young woman, gives you some real metabolic advantages. But with women, there was a real disadvantage, and that is if I take a 70-year-old woman and truly give her the hormone balance of a 25-year-old woman, a large percentage of them will start menstruating again. And if I make 70-year-old women menstruate, they're going to make unkind comments about my ancestry on their way out the door. So we have to kind of moderate that. Men are simple. We all want to be as strong, fast, lean, smart, and sexy as humanly possible. So if I take a 70-year-old and move him back to 25 as far as his endocrine function goes, he's just going to smile ear to ear. With women, all right, we have to kind of make some adjustments based on what they want. Although I'd like to point out, I've had some Chinese ladies, one who was coming here from China before they basically fixed it so she couldn't anymore. She wanted to have periods again, even though she was in her 60s, because for her, in her culture, menstruation was a sign of youth and vitality. Well, most women just don't want to have it. Estrogen levels in men. There is a enzyme in male fat, in fact, in everybody's fat, that converts testosterone to estrogen. See, testosterone and estrogen are almost the same molecule. There's one hydroxyl group difference between the two. So you can aromatize testosterone into estrogen very easily. And most American men over the age of 50 are overweight. They've got excess body fat, which means they've got excess enzyme to convert their testosterone into estrogen. So I looked at these guys, you know, many of them who had their man boobs, and said, you know, it may well be that that conversion of testosterone to estrogen may be part of why they're getting enlarged breasts. It may be part of their estrogen effect. They're kind of weepy, their diffident personalities. The fact old men are not the strong, aggressive, virile versions of themselves that they were in their 20s and 30s. So we said, let's damp their estrogens down to levels that are normally found in lean, healthy young men. So that's where we started back in the 90s. As the decades have gone,
lean, young, healthy young men usually have lower estradiol levels.
Yes, precisely. And my thinking at the time was they have less body fat, and that less body fat means they don't have as much aromatase, which means they're not converting as much of their testosterone into estrogen. And so why don't we try to recreate that lower level in older men? That was my right. thinking at the time. And so mm-hmm. our goals for estrogen were pretty modest. We wanted pretty low levels in our men in those days. And sometimes we would use an aromatase inhibitor to block their ability to convert testosterone into estrogen. But as time has gone by, we found that it was more complex than that. Now, I hear some music in my earpiece that says we're going to have to take a break, but I'm going to explain that complexity and why my thinking has evolved over the last almost 30 years, okay? I'll be right back in about 2 minutes.
That's right. Okay. You stay right there, Ben. We're going to take a break, and then we will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there. Here's that number to get through, 1-800-465-8770. We'll be back with hour number two in just a moment.